everyone. Thank you so much for joining in today. Happy International Women's Day. So guys, welcome to Step Up Nigeria's special edition of X Space, dedicated to celebrating International Women's Day 2024 with the theme Inspire Inclusion. Inspire inclusion to me means that we want more men to join in the fight for women's rights. I mean, we all have women in our life. We have sisters, we have mothers, and we have daughters. And we need to amplify the voice of women to be heard. A wise person once said that it's a smart decision for society, for the society, when we invest in both women and girls. And so today's theme, Inspire Inclusion, it's something that I am really so glad that for the fight for women's rights, we've come a long way, and now we want more men to be in this fight. And today, we honor the remarkable contributions of women in the ongoing battle against corruption. And today, we are going to be speaking about the role of women in the fight against corruption. And today, we are joined by two amazing guests. We are joined by Zainab Haruna, who is the Impact Ventures lead for 1 Acre Fund. Hi, Zainab. Can you please unmute yourself so we hear your voice?
Hi, Bemi. I hope you can hear me clearly.
Yes, I can. Happy International Women's Day, and thank you so much for joining in today.
Same to you. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And also, we are joined by Halima Olufade, who is the Head of Programs Delivery for Step Up Nigeria. Welcome, Halima. Welcome to the show. Please, can you unmute yourself so we hear your lovely voice?
Hi, Bimi. Thank you. Good evening. And hi, everyone. Happy International Women's Day, and to all women here, Happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Day to you too, Halima. So we'll go right into the question, and my first question will be directed to Halima. So Halima, International Day, which popularly called the YWD Day, is an opportunity to celebrate the progress we have made in advancing gender equality and to consider what we need to do more in the fight for gender equality and the fight for women's rights. And I am actually very curious to know what the theme Inspire Inclusion means to you.
Thank you very much, Bimi. For me, the theme Inspire Inclusion means that it's also time to actively champion diversity and equity, and also to amplify the voices of the marginalized, especially women in rural communities who don't have access to as much as we other women do, and to also dismantle barriers that would hinder women from participating in whatever space they would want to be. So the team basically inspires me to ensure that women at all levels, women are included in different programs, in development issues at all levels.
All right, thank you so much, Halima. I get what you said. And particularly, I think I like when you said women at all levels, even women in rural communities, women, women living with disabilities at all levels have been included in this fight. So I'll come straight to you, Zainab. What does the topic inclusion means to you in the fight for corruption?
As we are looking at, because today we are talking about corruption, I think it's also important to define what corruption is. And essentially corruption is, in layman's terms, corruption is the abuse of power for personal gain, right? So if you take that definition and you look at inclusion, so what does inclusion mean in the context of corruption? It is how many women are invited to have a seat at the table, which essentially just means how many women do have power. Right? Because for somebody to even have power that they are abusing, for you to be corrupt, you have to have power that you're abusing in the first place. So the fundamental question is how many women do have power and how many women don't? Because if we want to have a conversation of what it means to be included, then we also have to take a critical look at what makes up our power structures, whether it be at home, whether it be in society, at work, in our religious institutions, in our educational institutions. Where do women sit when we talk about power? Are they doling out power, or are they on the receiving end of power? Because however you look at that equation, it then means that if they are on the receiving end most of the time, which is what we know in the Nigerian context, which Nigeria still remains a largely patriarchal society in the Nigerian context means that women most of the time are on the receiving end of power, which means what that then means automatically is that women are usually victims of corruption, right? So when we talk about today on International Women's Day, we're talking about the role of women in fighting corruption. I think I have another question, which is how can we get more women to be able to control power so that they aren't usually at the receiving end of it, and in that way they are not usually victims of it? And how do we control that narrative where people who realize, who know that they have power regardless of the gender, whether they are men, women, or non-binary individuals, when they hold power and are wielding it, how can we get more people to wield it for the benefits of, for the greater benefit of everyone rather than for selfish interests? So that's kind of my take on inclusion in the context of corruption as we're looking at it in this conversation. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Jada. You made mention that women are actually actually on the receiving end of power. So that's to say women are not being involved in tables. Women are not being called upon in tables. Like, for example, in our House of Assembly, we don't have women sitting in tables to actually take that decision for us. Now, it brings me to my next question. I would like to ask, right, because we know that there are barriers that actually are stopping women from being involved on the peace table. There are barriers stopping women from being able to speak up. And I'd like you to throw more light on that. Like, what are these barriers that you think that women are actually facing that's actually stopping them from being involved in all these conversations?
So I think there are different barriers that impede women that impede women from participating or from being able to control or to be able to contribute more effectively in society. A lot of that is cultural, some of that is religious, some of that is ingrained in people. So it's the question of also not sure how do we raise our children, what do we tell our children, what do we tell our girls when we are raising them. We live in a society where it's for the longest time it's been quite acceptable for girls to be told that they should stay in the background, that they should be quiet, that they shouldn't speak up. And what happens when year in, year out, over decades, over centuries, that is the education that young girls are receiving, then what happens is they pass that knowledge on to their children, and over time you have this understanding, spoken or unspoken, that women and girls are not supposed to be vocal, they are not supposed to be, they are supposed to fit a certain mold and they are supposed to be a certain way. So those cultural knowledge goes a long way to shape how women perceive power, how they interact with it, and also how they wield it as well when they even also come into positions of power. Because most of the time when even women who have been able to make it into positions of power still cater to what they perceive is accepted for women to do, right? So they, even if it's very likely that even, so I'll give you an example. One aspect of corruption that we've started in Nigeria, started taking a really strong look at, and we have a coalition of civil society organizations that are against it, is sextortion. I know Step Up Nigeria is one of the organizations who are part of that coalition as well. So a lot of sexual offenses, for example, that happen, sextortion that happens, usually sometimes happens in the home front, where a child is, you know, molested or whatever by an adult male within their household, or a husband is battering their wife, for example, home violence. Women, so in that instance, a wife, for example, on the home front, if their child was being molested by maybe an uncle, or even in some cases their husband, the wife in that situation is in a position of power to say, you cannot do this to my child, I will, you know, report you to the police, I will take this sort of action against you. But because of the knowledge that they've soaked in, you know, culturally, it is known that you cannot break up the family unit, you cannot go up against your husband. So most women in those situations actually sweep such situations under the rug. They do not talk about it. What they are more afraid of in those situations is the shame that will come to the family. So yes, that woman in that position is in a position to wield power, but because of the cultural shaping that she has gone through in that situation, she doesn't want to speak out because that would go against everything that she has been taught. So that's one aspect. There's also, of course, the religious aspect as well, where different religions have different stipulations as to what is to do, how you're supposed to do it, etc. And sometimes you can see that clashing with what we would expect to see kind of like in modern societies, for example. So that kind of also comes into play as well. Currently, I do a lot of work with farmers in very deep rural communities. And even as at last year, we were in some of those communities, we were trying to have like a town hall, a focus group discussion where women and men, members of the communities, could come and tell us what it is that they wanted our programs to do for them, what they would like to see, how they would like us to engage with them. And of those locations, because of the part of the country we were working, we saw very few women, in fact, no women at all participated in those focus group discussions. And when we asked to say, where are the women, why are they not participating? We were told that women are not allowed to speak when men are speaking. So they are not even allowed to come and sit and listen and engage and speak. Even though the work that we do, a lot of the time, it does affect women. So you see those cultural, religious contexts, and even the education kind of that is taught in many schools most of the time also plays a role in some of this. So if we really want to address that, we have to take a critical look at what does our culture say about women's roles in society? First of all, what does our religion say about women's role in society before we can even start having a conversation about women's roles in fighting corruption? Because if we want to put women on the same pedestal as men, then you have to give women the same opportunities, the same room, the same space to be able to command and to shape things as much as we give to the other gender. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Zainab. What I got from what Zainab said, she said our culture, because like we all know, culture is the way of life, and our culture actually has a way of shaping the way we think, the way we do things, the way we actually participate in politics as women and also as men. So my next question would be to Halima. Halima, do you think that we can actually change the way our culture shows women to the world? Do you think we can actually change how our religion gives permission for women to speak up? I mean, okay, so I grew up in a house where I am actually allowed to speak up, to air my views, but there are not so many women that have grown up in that particular environment. So how do you think we can change culture, or do you actually even think we can change culture in the first place? Then before we now even go to how can we change the way we think and all of that?
Yeah, definitely culture can be changed, because like someone started something and it became a tradition and people started following it, right? So it's more about, first of all, I would say it can be changed, and the way things can be changed is rather becoming education and awareness, right? So it's just ensuring to let them know that it's allowed for them to give women voice, the voice they need. They should be allowed to speak. They shouldn't be just allowed to just, you know, sit behind and then just take whatever it is that is being dished out to them. As Zainab mentioned earlier, for us, even for women to have the space to speak, we need to change the narrative that women don't have a space at all. We need to give them that space. And to be able to do that, we'll first of all start with educating them, creating awareness for them to know that, yes, you can't just sit down and providing women with the knowledge about their rights, and how whatever they do is detrimental to maybe to the society. Give them the tools that would help them, basically tools for advocacy to empower them to be able to stand up and challenge the status quo, basically. And also, you know, create some sort of support networks, which is easier for women to come together, you know, speak their mind, express how they feel, and people can come together. It's just like saying when people share, you know, share their experiences, and you have like a very good support group behind you where you could just go and say, yeah, I experienced, I feel like this. And they tell you, oh, yeah, you're not supposed to feel like this. Just imagine a woman that's at home where her husband is, she's facing gender violence. She's been beaten on a daily basis. And she has a very good support that she could go back to and say, I experienced this in my house. And they could come back and say, oh, no, you need to speak up. We are there to support you. Most of people who faces violence at home is, and the reason why they don't speak up is, first of all, maybe they don't even know what to do when they speak up, or maybe they feel when they leave the abusive relationship, they have no support system to go back to. But when women have these spaces, they know that when they speak out, they have people around to support them, would actually also enable them to be able to, you know, come out and speak, and thereby we're changing the culture of keeping silent, thinking that women have no right to speak. They have no right to hold positions, or they have no right to go out there and be leaders.
Thank you so much, Halima. So as the head of programs delivery for Step Up Nigeria, can you tell us some of the tools that Step Up Nigeria have actually given to women to actually be on the forefront of the fight against corruption?
I would say that Step Up Nigeria is it's a gender equality organization, and that's why when we're using our tools in educating women, we ensure that it's gender balanced. And some of our books that we use, we have women at the forefront, like Halima's Vote, where we had Halima going out to speak against corruption in her community. And Halima was able to inspire, like Halima was one of my favorite stories anyway, Halima's. I am multiple women to come out, and there was no point for them to speak. They feel like speaking up wouldn't have helped in any way. Also, Abike Stone, which is our virtual reality theme, that they shouldn't just take the back seat in corruption, because they are the ones at the receiving end. It affects women the most. Lack of access to fetch water for their farms, even go to their farms. They are the ones that on the road to the farm because they lack security. But watching Halima's Vote and Abike's story has actually inspired them to actually stand up. And for instance, we have the story of Ruth from Akeleku City when we went for the first time with that integrity initiative. And Ruth has been in a committee for so long, and she has been seeing men collecting women's ballot paper during election to vote on their behalf, telling them they have no right to vote because they are women, or saying, oh, you don't know how to vote, so let's help you. You don't need to vote. Just sit down and we'll help you. And she has seen that happening a lot of times. And she didn't know she had a voice. She didn't know she could actually speak up against those bad corrupt practices. Until we went to her community and she read about Halima, she watched Halima's Vote film, she watched Abike's film, Abike's story, and she understood that, okay, I actually do have the right. I don't have to sit down and allow the men to just take over my rights when I can actually stand up. And she stood up. Ruth went back to her community, spoke to every woman in her community. And the first time in her community, women in her community voted by themselves. So that shows that involving women in the fight against corruption would actually really go a long way in eradicating the corrupt practices that we would like to be removed in our society.
Okay, thank you so much, Halima, for that insight. And well done on the work Step Up Nigeria is currently doing for the fight against corruption. Now, we're speaking, the theme for International Women's Day is actually Inspire Inclusion. And my next question will be going to Zainab. So now we are saying we want more men to join in the fight. We want more women to also join in the fight at all levels. So I'd like you to please share your perspective on why it is essential for women to join the fight against corruption and how their involvement may differ from that of men. So how, when women come to this fight, what's going to be the different thing that we would see them do? Why should they be given these opportunities to actually come to these tables and actually fight against corruption?
Thanks, goodness. I think that women being valuable members of society with agency and with capacity should always be allowed to participate in social campaigns, in the quest to build better communities, to build better societies. And it's not a case of doing women a favor, it's a case of women are members of society. So in the same way as men are able to contribute, women should also be allowed to contribute. And in Nigeria, I think currently the population is currently somewhere around 50-50 in terms of women's numbers and men's numbers. So it's like half of the population, the adult population anyway. So it's better to everyone's benefit to have, rather than having just half of your population fighting a social menace, the more numbers you have, the more hands you have on deck, coming together, brainstorming, working towards to drive the solutions, the more, you know, we are able to see results. Numbers are critical. The more people we get on the side of doing good, the better results that we'll see happening, that we'll see taking place in society. In terms of what could potentially be the difference by having more women participate in this fight, more women speaking up, I think one of the things that Halima really said that I completely agree with is that women, as well as men, are affected by the impact, the negative impact of corruption. So if a ex-chancellor of the university, the classrooms, the lecture hall, and instead of doing that, he decided to take that, he or she, because women are just as capable of being corrupt, instead of doing that, he or she then takes the funds and decides to use it to buy a jet or buy a yacht or whatever it is that they decide is of better value to them personally. The impact, the human cost of that is that all of the children that go to the school, all of the kids, all of our young adults that go to that school looking to gain education will not gain valuable education because they do not have the conducive learning environment. And the effect of that translates to affect us all. When we travel, say there's money that has been given to a certain, maybe a minister or a commissioner to complete the road networks in a particular state, right? And instead of using that, they use it for something else for their own personal benefit. Everybody that travels on that road gets affected. Doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman or a child, whether matter what color your skin is, as long as you travel on that road, you are going to be affected. And if there's an accident on that road, it could happen to anybody. So the human cost does not discriminate. Therefore, the people who are responsible, everybody should be held accountable. We should all hold ourselves accountable for coming to the table and challenging corruption and doing something to joining in the fight against corruption and how that could change. I don't like to speak to gendered roles, but the reality is that still in Nigeria, women still hold a lot of the nurturing of young children. Women still hold a lot of unpaid roles for caring for the home, right? They are still primarily responsible for taking care of the children, taking care of old members of the family, of sick members of the family. So women still do a lot of that. What could potentially change if more women get involved is we could see potentially an early transfer of knowledge and early building of knowledge in the minds of children as to what is right and what is wrong, what is corrupt and what is not, and how you should always do the right thing. And that knowledge should ideally start from the home. Parents, mothers and fathers are responsible for embedding in their children the kinds of values that children will take up and then go on continue within their life. I always like to say that the values that I hold now as an adult were things that I saw my mother doing, were things that I saw my father doing. My father never took one naira from anybody in a malicious way or, you know, behind the person's back. Even when the person could possibly have forgotten, he would always be like, well, it's not mine. Why would I want to keep it? And as an adult, those are still the values that I live by. If something doesn't belong to me, I have zero interest in it, right? So moral values are, it's critical for us to start building moral values in children from the home front. And even though we would love to see men more involved in the raising of kids. As at now, women are doing a lot more of that in Nigeria. So if we start to see more women, what it will translate to is seeing more of that happening on the home front. We also see women organizing kind of like a bit differently. Women organize in a way that they build communities around the organizing. Halima talked about fallback communities, communities built around women where women are able to come back in and embrace and kind of heal from trauma and anything that has happened to them. Women build communities around their organizing. So when we see maybe the charge against corruption, it will come in the form of building a community around that. How do I lean on my sister? How do I lean on my friend to help me build this this community of women who have zero tolerance against corruption? How do I spread that knowledge? How do I hold other people accountable? We do not go alone, right? And there's a whole other story around why women do not do things alone. But we do not go alone, so we go with someone. So by the nature of the engagement, by the nature of the way that women engage any issues, which I think is how they would also, women will also engage with corruption, by the way that women engage, what you see, what you could potentially see is a higher potential for critical mass, a higher potential for getting the numbers that we want to see in the fight. So deliberately engaging women is you never engage a single woman, you engage a community, because when she goes to make her hair, she will tell her salonist, anybody that comes into that salon, the salonist will tell that person as well, right? So we will see, I'm hoping and I'm guessing that we'll see more of critical mass. In just as an offshoot of that is that women also care for other women. So if you realize that there's danger here, you would usually have a way of sharing that information, right? There's hardly ever a situation where a woman feels unsafe and she decides, oh, I'm going to keep this knowledge to myself, I'm not going to tell anybody. No, she has a younger sister, she's definitely telling that younger sister. She has a friend, she's telling that person. So by that way, we can build faster awareness and faster systems of transfers of knowledge that can help information spread quicker, help us disseminate bodies of knowledge around what corruption means, the detrimental effects, spread out across first women communities, but also filtering out into like the larger communities as well. That would also be something that I would expect to see. And I would also expect to see a lot more grassroots organizing around some of these key messages as well. Halima talked about the story of the lady in her community where she came into the community when she realized the detrimental effects of the community. She thought not of herself, but she thought of her community. So we can see a lot more grassroots organizing around these topics. Now, one of the things I like to say is that grassroots women in Nigeria are extremely powerful. It is the person who doesn't know that underestimates the power of women around grassroots organizing. I currently do some work in Nasarawa, in Niger State, and the way that women organize in those communities is really interesting. When one woman comes out, she comes out like with a lot, with her entourage. Like, they really go out when they want to engage. So I think we will see a lot, it's shaping more as community organizing, as grassroots organizing, because that is how women move, that is how women engage with issues. Yeah, so that's kind of what I would expect to see that might be a bit different, where it was just one gender that was engaging with the issues. Yeah, thanks, goodness.
Thank you so much, Zainab, and well done for the work you're currently doing in Nasarawa and Niger State. I think what actually, you said a lot of things, and I like the idea that you said you don't just educate a woman, you actually engage in a community. And for the fact that you said we're not doing women favor by allowing them come to the tables to speak up against all these societal issues that we are currently facing, and it's for everyone's benefit to actually fight corruption. So it's for whether you're a man, you're a female, you're black or white, it's for everybody's benefit that we are actually fighting against corruption. So the next question on our list would just be, what do you think are actually promising opportunities for advancing the role of women in fighting corruption? I know you've said a few of that, but I just wanted to like maybe list one or two of the promising opportunities on how we can advance the role of women in the fight against corruption, and how we can all collectively seize this opportunity for a greater impact.
Right. In terms of opportunities, I think there are quite a number of opportunities in our kind of like in front of us that we could look to leverage on as we want to gather more momentum around the topic of corruption, getting more people to understand what corruption is, how it negatively impacts them, so they don't think it's this far away concept, it only has to do with people in power and doesn't really affect them. One of it is, I would say, this social awareness that's kind of been gaining momentum in recent years in Nigeria, which is largely attributable to the work of women's organizations in Nigeria. I think they've done significant work. And there's this rising awareness, especially not just in my generation, but with Gen Zs. And, you know, there's this vocalization, right, that comes from the place of an empowered woman. And yeah, I'm seeing more of that happening. And there's significant opportunities that are there. If you have like a larger proportion of the population who are not afraid to speak out, then there's less likelihood that corruption is, because corruption thrives in secrecy, just like any other negative thing. It thrives in people knowing something is wrong, but keeping their mouth shut because they do not want to get the blowback from whatever could come out as a result of speaking out. But the more we have, you know, people not being afraid of speaking up, the less chances the spaces corruption is going to have to hide in the dark, where corrupt officials or corrupt people hide to do their dirty work. The second, of course, is technology, and by extension also is just social media. Social media has become this, you know, a very huge platform in our generation, where people are able to share, where people are able to speak up against things. We've seen quite a number of amazing documentaries that have been done as exposés on corrupt people, whether it's educational institutions or government organizations. We've seen quite a lot of work around that, and social media helps us disseminate that information so fast. So I can count, you know, we're using X now for this, X space for this conversation. Even after tomorrow, more people who didn't even get a chance to join this call right now could come back and listen to it. It's a resource that's going to be there for a long time that anybody could engage with. So the technology has like this amazing power to help us spread information, for helping us gain knowledge and spread knowledge. So I think there's that point as well. And there's also, of course, the gains that we are getting, or the gains that we're making from some of the work that have been done. There's significant gains that have been made. The Violence Against Persons Prohibitions Act, the Child Rights Act, all of those help to protect vulnerable groups of people from being unfairly, from being abused, from being victims of abuse of power by people who would like to use their power to hurt people who do not have the privileges that they have. So in that instance as well, we are seeing some gains. It's a snail's progress, but it's progress all the same. And we're seeing some gains coming out of that as well. And the work is going to, so the thing that victory does is, no matter how small victory is, it empowers people. So people look at, I could also achieve this. I could also do this. I could do more. You know, I've gotten this little victory today. Maybe tomorrow will come with a greater victory. So it keeps hope alive. I also quite like kind of like the collaboration that's currently happening with organizations that are primarily responsible for prosecuting corrupt activities, organizations like the Independent Corrupt Practices and other Related Offenses Commission, organizations like the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, the Ministry of Justice, And kind of like the partnership that's happening with civil society organizations like Step Up Nigeria, who are really at the forefront of fighting corruption. And in that mix is also coming in women's organizations as well. So it's a really potent mix that's going to help drive sufficient progress, let's not forget the media organizations as well. Journalists are doing a really fantastic job with exposing corruption and spreading the knowledge so that people are aware. So I think all of that coming together, it's really making it like a really, it's making the space green in terms of what could potentially happen and how we could tackle corruption faster. I also like, you know, the work. I really like the work that Step Up is using. I mean, I was part of Step Up for about 3 years. And the work that Step Up is doing with engaging children early is, I think the impact of that can't even be properly calculated today. You will have to come back in 10 years, in 15 years to the children that you are engaging now, who now have the greater understanding of what corruption means, and engage with them. And you then have to do like a real randomized control trial and test the children, maybe children that were never engaged on these issues, and then test the people that you did engage, and then see the parallels, you know, how their lives have unfolded and kind of how they look at decision making and how they engage with power, with corridors of power, with people in power. And I think that the impact is going to be potentially huge. So that also presents like amazing opportunities. Young girls in the classrooms that you're talking today, they are going into with a stronger understanding, with a firmer conviction around what is right and what is wrong. And that's just going to translate into building generations of knowledge, bodies of knowledge that generations to come will also be feeding from. So I think that there's quite significant opportunities any way you look at it. And it's really interesting just watching how in real time, watching it all unfold and what potentially the future could hold. So yeah, those would be my thoughts around potential opportunities that we could be looking at in the future.
Thank you so much, thank you so much, Zainab. I like the fact that you spoke about technology, and then in passing you said something about social media. When we actually share our stories, the impact that we're making on projects, people will actually know, like you said, that no matter how small the victory is, I can also do something to effect change in my community. Halima, are you back now?
Yes, I am, Remy. I'm so sorry. I couldn't unmute.
All right, no problem. So one of the things Zainab highlighted while she was speaking was when we educate women, when we engage women, they are being able to pass to early transfer of knowledge to their children, that being able to get the knowledge that they get, they have been able to actually transfer it early enough for their children. So I was asking that, can you please speak to this, what you're currently doing with the Catch Them Young initiative and also the Out of School initiative as well?
Okay, thank you very much, Kim. So the Catch Them Young initiative is about us trying to catch young generation of children very young, and to change their mindset. Like our founder would say, to fight against corruption, you have to start with what we teach our children. And we all know that children, their minds are like sponges. They just take whatever it is you give it to them. And all of us grew up having superheroes, or we grew up having role models that we read in our storybooks, or that we see. Maybe we have like our fathers, our mothers, our brothers, or an uncle that we've seen that we would really like as role models. And so this has enabled us to be able to put quite stories about heroes, anti-corruption champions, anti-corruption heroes who have stood up in their communities to speak up against corruption. And that's where we have Answer Speech, Halima's Vote, we have Tosin's Story, and then we have Emeka's Money. And so we use the storybooks to go to meet children in schools, in out-of-school communities, to educate them why it's very important for them to stand up against corruption. And I know people have said like, oh yeah, children are too small, they don't have to be taught these things, we need to go ahead and speak to those at the House of Assembly. But like Zainab mentioned earlier, children, women are taking the role of taking care of children at home. And whatever it is that you give to the children is what they will take, they will grow up with. Like Zainab mentioned, Hazard has been our role model for a very long time, which means that when children are at home and they have their parents telling them not to, you know, you need to do the right thing, even when nobody's there watching you. It means that it's going a long way in changing our society. Women will be, children will grow up, girls will grow up knowing that they have a space, and they also know that they can speak up against corrupt practices. And we've seen younger children. The person that won our Anti-Corruption Star Awards last 2 years was a girl. The one person that won it in 2021 was a very little girl who had stood up against bullying in her school. And this has empowered her. She grew up becoming the head girl of her school, which shows that she now has a voice. She understands she has a voice, and she can go out there to speak against any corrupt practices she sees. Not only corrupt practices, but any bad action she sees out there. Her confidence through our Catalan initiative, her confidence has been built up. To know that when she sees something going on, she can stand up and speak against it. Children in marginalized communities, out-of-school communities, have also known that they are now empowered to speak up against corrupt practices. They've read the story of Halima, they've read the story of Ansa, and they are quite inspired to know that corruption, when they see corrupt practices, they shouldn't just take a back seat. They can actually come out, irrespective of their gender, to speak up against bad actions. And, you know, when we talk about the Cajun Young Initiative, we also have our animation films, and we have our TAC books that has, you know, inspired children to speak up. Every year, we have hundreds of young anti-corruption stars that we've seen, champions that we've nominated, that have amazing stories. We have the story of Esther that actually stopped her mom from giving a fuel attendant bribe at the filling station. Esther was just 8 or 7 years old. Esther is going to grow up to become a woman that will be able to speak up, that would be given the space to speak up against corrupt practices, because now she understands she has the power and she has a voice to speak up. So that's basically what we do with our Catalan Initiative. And we tend to include both women, talking about inclusion, right? We include children in out of school, children that don't have access to, you know, the regular four walls of the classroom, and also children living with disabilities. We speak to children we try to encourage that all these children are inclusive in, and we majorly focus on girls as well. We ensure that whatever our engagement is, at least we have 50% of women and girls involved in our projects.
Thank you so very much, Halima. Thank you for sharing that light to what you're currently doing with the Catch Them Young Initiative, and how you're actually including women to this fight and teaching them that they also can speak about corruption. Now we're going to open the floor for questions and answer. So please, if you have a question, just kindly request for a mic and it will be given to you. Actually leave a comment on the comment section, and then we'll hand over the mic to you. Thank you. So we're waiting for our audience to actually ask questions. Please make some contributions to what you've been hearing so far. You can just ask for a mic and then we'll unmute you and you could actually ask your questions. Thank you. Okay, so Joshua has requested for a mic. Can you, can Hadiza, please give Joshua a mic so he could speak. Request for the mic again, Joshua. Okay, so one of Joshua's question was that so he said engaging a woman is a deliberate something that can transform our community. He then asked that how can we empower more women? So I'll just read it again properly. He said, engaging a woman is a deliberate thing and it can actually also transform our community. So how then can we empower more women? So Halima, could you please speak to this?
Thank you, Joshua. Thank you, Demi. To empower women, like I said earlier, we need to start by educating them, creating more awareness for them to understand what their role is. We also need to promote women leadership, right? So we need to understand that they can make decisions. We need to break down the barriers for women when participating. We need to give them equal opportunities to be able to participate in programs, in issues coming in their community. Like sorry, I gave earlier, right? So if Ruth hadn't stepped up to say she would want to participate in voting in her community, and if that space was not there to even start with, then she wouldn't have been able to make the changes she was able to make. So to start with, we all need to create awareness, and we also need to give women the space to be able to go into leadership positions. We also need to build the capacity of women. Women have been marginalized for so long, which has prevented them from acquiring some of these skills they need to even be in those positions. So we also need to build the capacity of women. We need to help them create training programs to help people to build their capacity to get to that space where they could boldly come out and own the space as they should.
Then the next question from Joshua, he said this question is for Zainab. And he said, Zainab, you said something about growing up and the scenario where both of your parents played active role in your upbringing. And then he said, what has changed and why has it been relegated to women and mothers alone in both, in most parts of the country?
Hi, goodness. Who asked the question? Was it Joshua?
Yes, Joshua asked the question.
Okay. Thanks very much, Joshua, for that question. I don't think that anything has changed. I mean, like in different households, things tend to happen differently. Even in my household, my dad worked most of the time. My mom stayed at home and took care of the kids. So it wasn't like both of them stayed at home and took care of the kids. No, it was primarily my mom that stayed home and took care of the kids. And my mom had her own sets of values that she puts into us for till today. I'm still very finicky about my environment. I'm obsessively clean. And those values were things that I picked from my mom. My mom made hand washing a thing before COVID-19. So by the time COVID-19 came around and everybody were washing their hands, my mom was like, but I was doing this a long time ago. So they both had their own different values. I used an example of something that I picked up from my dad. And just generally, it's still majority. I mean, in individual households, kind of, there are no gender roles. So the man and the woman will both take equal part in taking care of like that. Because there are households like that doesn't mean that makes it the most, I think, as a story to make a general comment, anecdotal story. So yes, there are even people on the call, I also mentioned earlier that in her household things were pretty equal. Halima as well has also mentioned something like that. But if you go out into the larger society, of course you see a disproportionate in terms of who is responsible for taking care of the home and who is responsible for going out and bringing home the money. So that's just I don't think my individual story just tends to change what is generally found in the larger society. I hope that answers the question.
Faith has requested for a mic. Maybe Faith could ask a question.
Thank you very much. It's been a great conversation. I found it really insightful. I think I woke up this morning and when I saw the title of the theme of the space, the role of women in the fight against corruption, I was really thinking, we're asking to inspire inclusion and all. What's really the role of corruption? How is it limiting us in being amongst, right, like in what's going on? So the question I have is, so what do the both speakers think, right? Is it really, is including women, right, in the fight against corruption, is it really the key thing that's needed? Because I think either last week or 2 weeks ago, there was something that came up on the media. I think it was, is it the Minister of Women Affairs, where she made a comment about women, and it wasn't really funny. I think I've forgotten what it is that she said, but it was really a sad remark from her. And I mean, we're seeing that women are having these spaces, but they are not really doing something to sort of progress what it is we are going through, or our well-being and all of that. So is it really a matter of inclusion, or is it really around people knowing what is right for women? Like, it's where's the challenge? Because we've seen women who have held a seat of power, but they've not really done something. So what's really the problem there? Yeah, that's really my question. Thank you.
Faith, thanks for the question. And I think you're highlighting kind of one of the things that we get wrong when we actually engage with conversations on gender. And I'll give you even the example that you've used, the minister, it was the Minister of Women Affairs, and I think her remark was that when women should not talk back to their husbands when they're having an argument at home. I think I read the news article and that was the gist of it. And the longer context of that was that she was saying, you know, if you speak back to your husband, you could get beaten up, et cetera, et cetera. But the gist of it was, if you're having an argument with your husband, don't talk back, just sit and listen and let him say what it is that he wants to say so that you don't get beaten up. And that was the gist of it. And I think, so if I would give you, so I give you another scenario. For example, in a few years ago, I think 2020, there was a CCTV camera that recorded a Nigerian senator attacking a lady, a store. He went to a store and a store attendant was attending to him and he actually attacked her. Like, it was a physical altercation. He beat her up and it was captured on CCTV and it was put on social media. And we all saw it, right? Now, when we come back to the rooms, and we're having a conversation about the role of men and the role of women, what you tend to realize is that for women, if one person does something wrong, and I think it's something that we also need to critically ask ourselves why, if one woman does something wrong, it is a burden on all other women. So we question, oh, should we really be giving power to women if when we give women power, they are just going to do this, right? And that's the case of this woman in this situation who said what she said as the minister. But when men do, and men do a lot, right? Men do more than this. In fact, in this scenario that I've given, there's literally, I think it was Ebo, his last name was Ebo, Senator Ebo. Like, he literally beat somebody up. Until now, he's still in office, right? Nobody did anything to him. And when we have the conversations, we don't say, why should we give men power if all men are going to do is just go into stores and beat women up? Or I'll do you one better. We have the former governor. I don't know whether he's still the sitting governor. I don't keep up with Kano State politics. But he was caught on camera actually collecting bribes from people that he was, people who came to the States to do business and stuffing it in his kaftan, right? And nobody has said, why are we giving men power when all men come to do in office is collect bribes and stuff it in their outfit? So it's a disproportionate and it's an unfair correlation to make, to say that when a woman does something that we don't expect or we think is not good, the repercussions or the impact, we label every other woman, right? Like to say, oh, if you give women power, they're all just going to come and do this. And we've had very few women in power, but people still make the argument because of the women who've come into power, they are so few. And it's simple maths. Let me say, in one room you have 10 green people and in the other room you have 500 blue people, right? That's just an example. Human traits are human traits. The same traits of selfishness, of self-aggrandizement, of narcissism, of everything that is bad, is regardless of who you are. It's regardless of gender. It's regardless of where you are born. It's regardless of the privileges that you have access to. It will manifest. They are human traits. It is not because you are a woman that you are manifesting these traits. It's not because you are black. It's not because you are white. It's because you are human, right? So if you have 10 green people in a room, there's a higher likelihood that, compared to their population, you might see five of them misbehaving in a certain way. Maybe they're, you know, playing loud music and disturbing the neighbors. On the other hand, in the other room where you have 500 people, maybe there are 50 of them displaying similar behaviors. But because they have such a large population, it doesn't really stand out. You don't really see it and nobody really talks about it because there are already so many of them and the other people are doing good stuff. So you tend to focus on, oh, okay, these people are bad anyway, but the rest are good. We have 450 more people doing good stuff. But this other room, because four of them are doing bad stuff, you focus on those four. You're like, ah, this, you people, you are not even plenty. I see what you people are already doing. Why are you behaving like this? It is not it's a question of the numbers. Their act is magnified because they are such a small group and you can easily pick out the person that is doing the wrong thing and you can easily maximize that. And that's the same thing that happens. There are so many few women in power that when any one woman does something that is wrong, it's very clear because already there were so few of them. You can count them very quickly. 50, 20, there are not a lot of them. So when one does something that is wrong, it's very easy to pick out, ah, this woman, she has done something. Whereas men have been doing that a lot over the years. But if I tell you, tell me one woman who has done something wrong in the last 3 months, you'll pick up somebody very quickly. Tell me one man who has, you might struggle to think because they do it so often. So it's men now, it's what men do, right? So I think it's an unfair comparison or an unfair correlation to make or an unfair question to put on men. And I think one of the things we really need to do is take the burden of modesty, take the burden of what is good about everything in society off women and simply allow women be. If a woman comes into office and she does something that is wrong, the same rules apply, prosecute, if they are found guilty, jail, or whatever it is that you do to men, the same rules apply if we want a sane society, right? So I don't think that the question we should be asking is it really worth it to be talking about inclusion when the women that have been included don't seem to be getting it right? I don't think that's the question we should be asking. The question we should be asking is, how do we get more women included so that we have more people doing the right things, right? So that they set a standard for the other people to follow, which is what we've seen in men. We've had Nigeria is currently in the situation that it is. We know all the stories about the economics, the politics, and all of that. Who has traditionally ruled Nigeria from independence? Even the independent, the people that came, the white people that came and colonized us, they were men. And since they handed over to men. And it's men that have led Nigeria since 1960 till now. Are we then making the argument that men do a better job? I don't think that's what we can really say. But I don't want to digress, but I'm just saying, I think I kind of made my point, which is that it is not should we be giving men, should we be including women when if the ones we've included are doing the wrong thing, it is get more women in the room so that we have more people to set the kinds of values and the kind of standards that we want to see in society. And I rest my case.
Thank you so much, Zainab, for that wonderful insight. Halima, would you like to add to that question? Because we have other questions for you guys. Do you have something?
Zainab covered everything. Like she said, right, we just need to create more space for women to thrive, give them more space, and to also mention to Faith that it's not, I was like, men are also bad, right? It's not like it's only women that do bad things, or it's just like Zainab said, we have fewer women, and so when they do something, it's quite obvious. Than
so, like Zainab said, we should allow women be women, we should allow women breathe. The same principles, the same rules that are applied to women should also be applied to men. So just because they're women doesn't mean that they can't actually do something bad. So whatever rules that is actually in general applied to the society should be applied to everyone, whether men or women. Just let women breathe and give them opportunity to actually add their voices and do something for the society. All right, so we'll stop taking questions now and ask the final question. So this question is an open question to Halima and Zainab. Can you please give us like a message of inspiration on this day, on how women can actually go about in the fight for corruption, not just on today's day being the International Day of Women, but also in their everyday life? What's like the last word for women? Thank you.
Okay, so I would like to say that to all the remarkable women around the world committed to making a difference in the fight against corruption, and this is to all the women, right? Your dedication, it inspires us every day, like people like Zainab, our founder, all of this inspires us to be able to, you know, stand up and know that our voice matters, your voice do matter, and your courage is contagious. Even when we face adversity, we still stand up every day to fight alongside us for integrity. We advocate for integrity. You speak up for the truth. And today, together, we'll keep breaking barriers. We'll keep dismantling all the corrupt system that is not allowing Nigeria to grow. Where honesty, fairness, justice will prevail. And so on this day of International Women's Day and every day, I celebrate your strengths and I celebrate your resilience. And I hope that moving forward, the change we inspire, keep shining.
Thank you so much, Halima. Zainab, do you have like a last word for women out there?
Plus one to everything that Halima said. And just to also add that the fight against corruption is not a day's battle. It's a generational war, right? And it's something that very likely we won't see the results that we want to see in our generation, because the problems were not created in a single generation. It's an accumulation. Even the social norms, because the social norms have changed over the years in the way that people engage with what is right and wrong. So we can't expect that, oh, we do this today, we start seeing results tomorrow. But through consistent effort, showing up every day, doing the work and being consistent and showing up, even when it seems like we're not seeing the result, is going to be really important at the end of the day for us to see the kind of results that we want to see in years from now, maybe during our children's time, or during their children's time. But it's really important that we keep showing up. And like Halima said, I celebrate everybody's strength. Big ups to the entire Step Up Nigeria team for the work that you guys are doing. I cannot emphasize how much that work is important, because you are literally building the future. You're literally designing the Nigeria of our ideal future. And that work is so important. And I want to say a very big thank you to every member of the Step Up Nigeria team for the work that you're doing can seem like thankless work, can seem like really intense work, but it is so important if we want to see change in our country. And I say thank you to you, and thank you to everyone who took out time to come and listen to a couple of random women talk about corruption and how women can play a role in that on a Friday evening when they would rather have been, you know, chilling and hanging out with their friends and with their family. And I say thank you to you as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much to our guests. Thank you so much to our audience. Thank you guys for taking our time to join us today. Let's remember that together we can continue to inspire inclusion and empower women in the ongoing fight against corruption. Also, I like that you follow Step Up Nigeria across all social media platforms, on Facebook, on X, on Instagram, and on TikTok. And also, please subscribe to our newsletter at www.stepup.org. And also, remember that fighting corruption is everyone's business. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining in, and happy International Women's Day once more. See you some other time. Bye.